We're going to focus on prayer. The last shiur, we spoke a lot about tzaddikim and how they have a special koch of tefillah. And a person might wonder, cool, okay, interesting, but maybe it's just the super holy tzaddikim who have this koch of tefillah and they can do all this cool, miraculous stuff for simple guys like me and you. You know, where's the evidence for that, Rabbi? Now, I don't think I have to work too hard to convince you that Jewish belief, Torah, Halacha, Chassidus, Gemara, it's very clear that we believe that every prayer that we pray, God hears, and that the Gemara in Tanya says very clearly, there's never a prayer which goes empty-handed. In other words, even though God does answer no sometimes on a physical level, every prayer that we do always brings down blessing and good into our lives and into the world. Besides for the fact that it's a mitzvah and there's dvekus and attachment to God, but obviously the reason we do it is because God told us to do it, it's a mitzvah. Besides for that, Judaism believes that prayer is effective whether we see it or not. Sometimes he says yes or no, but it always does something whether we see it or not, right? Where's a great example in the Torah of a prayer which is of a guy who prays and it was heard and he prays and it's and God also says no sometimes. Who's a dude who prays and God says, nice, I like it, and also he says, sorry, man. Give me a dude who's like that. Abraham. The stone. God says no sometimes. God says yes sometimes.
Moshe.
How about Moshe Rabbeinu? Prays for the Jewish people, saves all of Am Yisrael. Good job.
I would argue stone. God said yes, but Abraham's criteria wasn't met.
He said yes in a different, not in the way that Abraham wanted.
During the...
But certainly we see times when...
What about the Holocaust? How many people were probably praying for that to stop? Or?
Certainly people... There's no doubt, there's no question that people pray and sometimes God says no to what they want. All I'm saying is that certain... Even in the Bible we see great tzaddikim like Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, prays to go to the land of Israel. And does he get to go to the land of Israel? No. Right, Eov. Fine. But that's not really a question, because everyone here knows, okay, the Bible believes. The question is, if I'm a skeptic and I don't believe in this stuff, do I have any evidence as a modern, because maybe the Torah is just a myth, you know, that these people believe in, it's very nice. Do I have any modern day evidence? That's what we're trying to do here. Everybody with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me give you a mushel. Because I think a lot of people say, it's great that you believe you're a rabbi, you believe, but it doesn't mean anything to me. It's just stories. And therefore I don't have to take it seriously. So I thought of the following mushel. It's not perfect, but I think it's similar. Imagine right now somebody came over and you said, dude, did you hear? It's a crazy drug. You take this little thing, meditate a little bit, 20 minutes, and there's books of stories of people who are saying that it has amazing effects. It can cure cancer. It can make you healthy when you're down. It can find your soulmate. It can even, you can eat it and you'll like eat any ice cream you want and you won't lose any weight. You won't gain weight. It's an amazing drug. It can do all sorts of crazy things. And there's hundreds of people testifying that it works. Okay. And there's one little catch. It doesn't always work. Meaning it's always really healthy for your body, they claim, but you don't always, it does because of some effects on the body. You won't always see the effects, but again, there are a lot of people who are claiming miraculous effects, okay? My question is, would you buy, the guy says, dude, read this book, it's crazy. Would you read the book if he's claiming that it can have an amazing effect on your life? Right, I think most reasonable, I think most reasonable, rational people would at least read the book. Right, and after reading the book, would maybe even give it a try. Right, what do you have to lose? Right,
it's like a really long book. Looking around this Midrash, it seems right. it's bookshelves long. It's very difficult.
A lot of books.
Can I get some excerpts?
Indeed. So that's what we're going to try to do tonight. I'm going to try to. What my claim is very simple. In the same way that you'd at least read the book, there are literally tens of books that I've personally read, and tens of videos, and tens of people I've met. And hundreds, maybe thousands of these stories, and even probably tens of stories in my own personal life that I think the statistical odds of them happening are very low. And just like this, you know, if someone's dying, he took the drug and he suddenly got better, I would say, whoa, maybe this drug, there's something to it, even if it doesn't always work. I think the same is true when it comes to prayer and mitzvot and good deeds. Okay? So tonight I think we'll focus a little bit more mainly on prayer, on a few stories about the affection of prayer for simple people. And maybe next week in part two, we'll focus more on kindness and hashkacha pratis, how God acts with hashkacha pratis when you do acts of kindness that are beyond our kelim. Okay, does that sound good? Sounds good. Okay. So there's a book called Living Amuna. And it's a cool story, actually, how I got to know this book. I tell you guys a story. Basically, some of you I told that I was learning with Donnie, and Donnie says, hey, have you heard of this book, Living Amuna? And I said, actually, no. And then I got home that night, and my wife had bought me this book called Living Amuna. It's pretty crazy.
Crazy.
And the whole...
Totally normal.
And the whole book is about Hashgacha Pratis, and how God runs the world, and that was Hashgacha Pratis. And it happens to be, it's very pocket-sized, so I can read it on the bus. And so it was a cool story. So I read this whole book is full of these stories, literally. There's thousands, probably hundreds, maybe thousands of these types of stories. I'll just tell you one. So there's a family. I forgot the name, but it gives the exact name of the family. Who lives in Yerushalayim. They're both Bali Tshuva, and they were married for 12 years and could not have children. So they came to this sad decision. They're going to separate in order to have children, because they had tried every medical procedure. There was no medical explanation, and they both really wanted to have a family. The friends of the dad... Of the husband tried to dissuade him from doing it because he was a Kohen. And as you guys know, if you're a Kohen, you can't remarry your wife because she's divorced, and a Kohen can't marry a divorced woman. So they said, don't do it. But he didn't listen, and he got a divorce. And sadly enough, a few months later, they found out, or just a little bit later, they found out that she was expecting, that she was going to have a baby from him. From him. Yes, she didn't remarry. It's a pretty heartbreaking story. It's heart sad to even talk about it. So he's obviously in extreme pain. And what he did is he went from rabbi to rabbi trying to find a way to apostle the get. To find a way to say that the get was not kosher. And he went to rabbi to rabbi, but unfortunately there's nothing wrong with the get. And he even went to Rav Elyashiv, who was one of the greatest poskim of the generation. And even Rav Elyashiv couldn't find anything wrong with this get. But Rav Elyashiv said, listen, do me a favor. Go to the Kotel and daven your heart out. Only Hashem can save you. And a lot of people have found Yeshuas at the Kotel. So go to the Kotel and daven. And the guy says, what do I have to lose? Goes to the Kotel, davening his heart out. And while he's davening, a guy comes up to him and says, go to your father. The guy thinks he's a little crazy. Keeps davening. Guy comes out to him again and says, go to your father. Kotel, okay. Freaked out. Goes home that night and he starts thinking to himself, the truth is, I haven't visited my father for a very long time. He lives in Dallas. We haven't been connected. Whether this guy's crazy or not, I should visit my father. Who knows? So he goes, books the ticket to visit his father. His father's so happy to see him. How you doing? How's your wife? And of course, he breaks down crying. Tells him the whole story. Doesn't know what to do. Doesn't know what to say. Dad, I don't know what to do. The father sits there staring at him for a couple of minutes. And he says, your mother made me swear that I wouldn't tell you, but I think I have to. You're not my biological son. We adopted you and we kept it a secret, but you're a Cohen. You're not a Cohen. Sorry. You're not a Cohen. In other words, you can remarry this wife. And obviously, he did. And they got back together. And it was a happy ending. And, and they remarried. It's and what is it, a sad story?
It's a sad story that has a happy ending. And
it was sad until you. Yeah, it's an intense story.
For weeks now, this is good.
That's a crazy story. You have a question?
I thought
if you remarry, if you were divorced, you just like lose your coin-ness.
He wasn't a Cohen in the first place.
I know, but I'm saying if the Cohen does remarry, then he's just like no longer a Cohen.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, he could do it, but it's not. I think it's a sin, regardless.
It's also in the first place, and if he goes past that sin, yeah. The punishment for that sin is he no longer gets the benefits of being a Cohen.
I mean, look, they could have lived together. Doesn't matter. They want. That's the story. It doesn't matter. Okay. Now, if you look at a story like that, there are basically three options the way I see it. Option number one. It's made up. Not a real story. Somebody forged the story, I guess, because he thought it was funny. I don't know. Option number two.
To teach a lesson.
Option number two. The rabbi made up the story, put on all these details, and just wants to be famous and forges stories. It's a fake story. Option number three, is the way I see it, I guess four. It's a coincidence. Anything's possible. Option number four. There's a God who listens to prayers. Personally, because there's so many of these stories, it's not just one isolated event. It seems likely to me that it's a fourth option. You guys can choose for yourself. That's what I think about that story. Let's tell a few more stories. Obviously, like I said, there are hundreds of these stories, but we don't have all night. And I'm really just trying
we're
to get
talking about we don't have all night, bro.
We do have all night, but I have a wife waiting, you know, and some of you, and also. If I go too long, I'm afraid people won't come this year. So, you got to find the right balance.
That sweet spot.
Plus, I think there is a point where you, like, overdo it and, like, you get the point. So, got to hit the sweet spot, exactly. So, I'll tell you another story. This is a book from Small Miracles. Small Miracles is a book by Yehuda Halberstam. And she's one of my favorite authors. She actually is, you know, she's alive, you can call her, whatever. She collects many stories. She has like five books called Small Miracles. As you can guess, the book is about
large
small
miracles.
Oh, small miracles.
Shoot,
which is
so
Hashkacha Pratis stories. I'll tell you a true story. When I was in camp, I used to tell a bedtime story to the campers. I'd go from bunk to bunk on Shabbos and tell bunk from Small Miracles. And that summer, when I was reading these miraculous, small miraculous stories, I would see many, many more miracles in my life. Now, the Rambam writes in Moreh Nevuchim that as the more a person is cognizant of Hashgacha Pratis, of God's watching over him, the more a person talks about it and thinks about it, the more they'll actually experience God's divine providence. Right? It's like a window. When you open it up, the light shines in. When you close it down, you won't see it and it won't even happen. So, just by talking about these miracles, I started experiencing much more miracles, and I hope that this will have the same effect on you guys, and the more you read and talk about miracles, you'll actually experience more miracles in your life. So, I'll just give a few cute stories, but there's a million of them like this. Okay. My wife, Brad Frager. Also, many of the stories aren't by Jews, they're just all sorts of people. Brad Frager tells a following cute story. My wife and I were living in Long Beach, California in the early 70s, and I got a job in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was driving my little VW, we called her Twinkie Wilma, up Highway 5, all alone, when it broke down in a desolate and empty expanse of concrete, an isolated and bleak stretch of the freeway. As well as I knew, the nearest gas station or town was more than 50 miles away. My prospects of securing help seemed bleak. I tinkered with the car valiantly, but nothing I tried could get it going again. I finally gave up. I'd been sitting by the side of the road for about an hour, feeling very helpless and forlorn, when I looked at my watch and I noted that it was 6:15. Nervously, I wondered if I would get to San Jose in time for my first day of work, 8 a.m. the next morning. Suddenly, without thinking about it, I automatically reached for the keys and tried to start the engine again. I don't know what happened to me, what prompted me. Some inner urge, which I could not explain, just compelled me to make another attempt. To my stunned surprise, the engine sprang to life as if nothing had ever been wrong with it. What a shock! I got my stuff together, shifted the car into gear, and drove the rest of the way without mishap. That night, I called my wife Kathy to tell her that I had arrived safely in San Jose and that everything was okay. Oh, she said, I wasn't worried. The kids and I prayed for you at dinner tonight. We did a special prayer for Twinkie Wilma. Do you know what time that was, I asked? Absolutely. I was watching the clock on the stove so dinner wouldn't burn. So what time was it? 6:15. Exactly. Kebab.
That's crazy.
Pretty crazy story, right?
It's not as crazy.
But the crazy part is that when you ask believers, when you ask people who genuinely believe and practice, you will very often find stories like this. I have experimented with this, and I have...
I had one today.
Yeah, you want to share?
So I went to, like, Tovel some stuff at the mikvah.
Yeah.
And as I was walking in, there was this guy walking out, and I was like, oh, where's the mikvah for toveling? And he showed me, and it turns out he was, like, one of the heads, so he had a key to get in. And otherwise, I would have had to, like, pay money to get in or something.
Oh, it's perfect timing.
Maybe it was closed, but, like, he was walking out, and he was the exact person that I asked.
Wow. Shkacha practice. Awesome.
I have a similar.
Yeah?
I was, like, toveling a knife. Like, I asked one of the women there.
Those women like, at the...
I know, such gosh, Miss Yehuda.
Oh, my gosh. Nothing.
So like she just like so like one of the women just took the knife, went into the mikvah, came back and
we're having a Shabbat time with you this
week. You're not no, supposed to do mikvah. Aren't you not supposed to?
Yeah, I think you guys are in a prison for
now. Ideally not, but we're getting off top. Okay. You want to say you have anything? Okay. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. The details aren't so important. Okay. I want to share with you a personal story or two.
Like, he was leaving as I was
It's a cute story. It's a cute story.
If it had been, like, right. 2 look, minutes...
Look, obviously, there's more... some stories are more debatably Yishkacha practice, and some are less.
Like
one, you know.
Maybe you're just not a true believer.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. All right, relax. This is all going publicly online, just by the way.
Maybe. We'll see. Anyways, okay. I'll tell you a personal story that's very close to my heart. When I was... So when I was in Bar Ilan University, it was my second year in Israel, and I was struggling with some emunah issues. Alex, stay for this one. It's a good story.
Yeah.
So I was studying Bible, and as you know, if you study Bible academically, sometimes questions come up, you know, biblical criticism, whatever. I was still a very frum guy of davening, learning, but I was having questions. This is the year after my year in Israel, I went to college in Bar Ilan. So, I remember one Shabbat, I went to Kfar Tapuach for Shabbat, and I prayed to God, as is my custom on Friday night, I schmoozed with the Kaddish Baruch a little bit, and I said, Hashem, you know, between you and I, we both know that you exist, but I'm having some struggles, so could you maybe send me a sign, send me something to show a little bit stronger your presence, because I'm struggling. I don't know if those were my exact words. That was the gist of what I told the chef that night. So I remember I had a beautiful meal, and I did something that I didn't normally do. I went to the Beis Medrash right after the meal. It was a very cold night, and I sat alone in the Beis Medrash, and I started learning Gemara. I remember it was the fourth parak of Brachos. Now, I always loved learning Jewish Sfarim, Chumash, stuff like that. I wasn't such a Gemara guy at the time. It did not come naturally to me, and I didn't always enjoy it. And I decided that night that if I'm asking God for a miracle, I need to go above my nature, push a little bit what's not normal for me, and I steiged a lot of Gemara. I like, for like, I probably more like an hour at least, I just steiged a couple of dapim of the fourth parak of Brachos. I was trying to make I decided I wanted to make a siyum. Sitting alone, okay. Some guy, about an hour later, walks into the Beis Medrash on the other side of the Beis Medrash, and he says, "Hey," and he just starts learning. And then another guy walks in, and he starts learning, and they're schmoozing with each other, and they get into a conversation. I'm just kind of listening in, and one of them goes to the other and says, "Oh, I forgot to mention one important detail. I was learning the fourth parak, which deals with the question of whether Mariv is optional or obligatory, according to the Gemara. That's the discussion, the fourth parak of Brachos. Randomly, he goes to the other dude and says, "Hey, man. Is Mariv like obligatory or is it optional?" Because I remember learning something once about it. Gemara, I don't remember. And they had no idea that I was learning that. And I stare at them, I stare at God, and I stare. I'm like, did that just happen? I'm like, this is crazy. And like, I take a minute. I'm like, well, actually, it's Machlokas, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, this and that, and Daf this and that, and the Gemara. And they're just like staring at me like, how does he know that? Like, you know, 19-year-old kid that goes the whole Gemara, all the shitas of Gemara, brachas, randomly. And look, anything, and they really weren't fake. They really didn't hear me. Anything could be. Anything really could be. But for me personally, it seemed strongly, I really felt strongly, like Hashem was listening to my tefillah, and he did answer my prayer to show his presence in my life. And this leads me to my second point, which I think, again, we could talk more about next week, which is, if you live your life like a miracle, then God will open the gates miraculously. But if you only stay within what's normal for you, then generally God will only kind of do what's normal for the world. Like, everything is in proportional to what you bring to the table. You have to start. And I didn't make this concept up. The Netivot Shalom writes this. It's a Hasidic Sefer. And it's brought down in many Hasidic Sefer, this idea that if you want God to hear God's messages, right, and God speaks to us through these little messages and miracles, you need to initiate going above and beyond what's natural and normal. Everybody with me so far? So I'll demonstrate that with another story. Okay. This story, I haven't read it for like years, and I chanced upon it tonight. So it's like reviewing, and I remembered it now. It's like one of my favorite stories, really. It's a little scary again, sorry. But it's crazy. Actually, yeah, I'll tell you this, and then I'll tell you guys maybe a last like story. It's a little lighter, a little more, so we won't end on a heavy note. But it's a crazy story. So Shlomo Carlebach, if you guys know Shlomo Carlebach, anything about him, Yida Halberstam knows a lot about him. She wrote the book about him, and every person he met, he hugged them, he loved them, and he would ask for their number often, and he would say, we'll keep in touch, let, you know, holy brother, let's be friends. And you would think like it was just a joke. He's a famous musician, meeting thousands, millions of people. At the end of his life, they found like 500,000 of these little scrapped up notes with numbers on it. He kept them. He kept these. And he would, a knack, he would call people whenever he had free time in a booth, and he had a knack of connecting to people at the right exact right time, just when he needed it. So the following story is told it doesn't give his name, you'll understand why. In 1997, in November, there was a weekend meeting of GACs, Jewish Alcoholics and Chemically Addicted. A man stood up and told the following story. I had given him my phone number at the concert 10 years before. He hadn't called and I was sorely disappointed. But I was philosophical, not bitter. I figured he's very famous, very busy guy, and how could he possibly call all those tens of thousands of strangers he met each year at the concerts and classes he gave throughout the world? I was wistful but shy. I would have liked to have had the courage to call him up myself, but I didn't. My heart longed for a connection with this saintly man, but even though he seemed warm and unassuming, I was too timid to take the initiative myself. 10 years passed. I never saw him again. And then one morning, the phone rang. I didn't want to answer it. I was in a very despondent state and didn't want to talk to anyone. But it rang repeatedly, insistently. The caller refused to give up. It must have rung 20 times. Reluctantly, I went to answer the phone. "Hey, holy brother, what's happening?" the caller asked in a jovial, familiar voice. It was Rabbi Shlomo Carlebach. I was stunned. It had been 10 years since he had first scribbled down my name. "Shlomo," I asked in total shock, "what made you call just now?" "Well, I was looking for an old Bible, which I haven't used for some time, and when I found it and opened it, a little piece of paper with your name and number fell out. I figured it was a sign from God. I should give you a call." An electric jolt coursed through my body and into my very soul. "Shlomo," I said, staring at the noose that was dangling from the ceiling and at the chair underneath it, which I had just prepared, "you called just in time." Whoa. It's a crazy story, right? Yeah. It's a really scary story, but it's a crazy story.
Did you see what happened? Or like,
he was okay. I mean, it doesn't give a continuation of the story, but he told the story, so I'm assuming, you know, Shlomo saved his life. Now, you might think the crazy part of the story is the Hashkacha Pratis, divine providence, that he called exactly at that time, or how amazing Shlomo was to call these people. That is amazing. What I find amazing about the story is that Shlomo didn't call once or twice, like normal people would. He called 20 times. Just because he found a little piece of paper in his chumash from someone that he probably had met 10 years earlier and probably had very little recollection of. because Rav Shlomo really believed in divine providence, and he really believed that if this is a message from God, this is a message from God, and he wouldn't give up. And he kept pushing, and he kept pushing. He was Moser Nefesh for this thing. So, yeah, it's an intense story. So sometimes you have to push a lot, apparently. All right, I'll end off with one more nice story of Hashkacha Pratis. And then we'll leave with a closing. Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach. Rabbi I know well. I know a lot of stories about him.
Oh, yeah, it's that guy.
That guy. Yeah, there's a lot of stories about Rav Shlomo Karlbach.
And his epic Karlbach story. Can we have a night where we just talk about epic Karlbach stories?
Sure, absolutely. But I'll tell you that more important than Rav Shlomo is the lesson that the reason so many stories happened to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Shlomo and the Baba Sali and Mordechai Eliyahu is because they so much believed in it and they went above and beyond normal in terms of their relationship to God.
Can you see the story of Rav Shlomo Karlbach and when someone...
Sure. Good story. Well, oh, the one when someone mugged him or the one when someone mugged his friend?
Both.
Okay. The one someone mugged him is a crazy story. Someone comes up to Rav Shlomo at Shabbos, and takes a gun to his... Give me all your money! Someone says, what? Give me all your money! He says, holy brother, it's Shabbos Kodesh, I don't have any money. But if you have to go through so much pain that you feel like you need to do this to me, you must need a hug. Give me a hug. Guy's like, what are you talking about? Give me all your money. So just give me a hug. Shlomo gives him a loving embrace and they hug there for a long time. Shlomo says, come back to me Saturday night. I'll give you some money. Don't worry. And they became good friends. And he had a chavrusha with this holy robber. That's the famous...
Was the Jewish guy the robber?
No. He wasn't Jewish guy.
That's not the story yet. What was the other one?
That wasn't the story. Now, the story that I tell, which is also pretty crazy, is that there's a Chabad dude in Central Park, and he's walking, and a guy comes up to him and says, give me all your money, him and two other dudes, and they're jumping him. And they're taking all his wallet and his money, and suddenly, when they're taking out his wallet, a little picture comes out of Shlomo Karlbach. And the dude is begging him, is like, how do you know that guy? He's like, Shlomo Karlbach, he's my friend, he's my rabbi, everybody knows Shlomo. He's like, you know Shlomo? I know Shlomo. He comes and chills with us under the bridge all the time. Yeah. I love that man. I let him go. He's a better friend of Shlomo.
So wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a crazy
Alex
story. It's a crazy story.
Alex,
it's a story. The details aren't important. You just don't remember. All right. One more Shlomo story about Hashkacha Pratis. But again, okay, you got the point. Once Shlomo was walking around Haight Ashbury in 1968 or so,
where?
And he San Francisco, and he sees hundreds of dispirited, drugged kids who have basically given up on life, and goes to his friend who retells the story. I forgot his name. Call him Shlomi, but he has a real name. And he says, again, we need a home, a house of love and prayer. When people come in, they feel loved. And when people leave, they feel missed. That's what people need. They need love. They need spirituality. They don't need drugs. They need spiritual drugs. Torah, Shabbos. And the guy says, Shlomo, it's an amazing idea. Shlomo says, good, go make it happen. Go get the money. The guy's like, what? But what are you talking about? So the next day, this guy is talking to his friend who's a Catholic. His name is John Seaman. I don't know why I remember his name. And he says, Shlomo Karlbach is unbelievable. He has this crazy idea to save all these kids' lives, but I don't have any money. The guy says, wow, it's an amazing idea. It's so important. I'll give you my whole life savings. Well, amazing. How much you got? $350. All right. It's a good start. Okay. Thank you. The next morning, he's walking around saying, I don't know, Shlomo wants me to get this house of love and prayer, $350. Like, how am I going to get anything? And he happens to see a real estate office. Walks into the real estate office, just kind of as a joke almost. And he's like, do you have any apartments for $300? You know, do you have any apartments available? He didn't say the money. And he says, actually, amazingly enough, I just got off the phone with a lawyer. And there's a legal entanglement. There's a really big mansion that it's not in such good shape, but, you know, it just got off onto the market right now, and it's super cheap because of the whole legal stuff. It's like, amazing. Wow. How much does it cost? Well, $300. It was a $50 deposit. And the guy says, $300. Whoa. He gets the apartment.
There's no such thing as any sort of real estate that's $300.
That's the story the guy says. So okay. Like all these things.
That's just like an insanely okay, tiny
okay, fine, amount. Fine. So maybe it was $5,000 and the money which was given was $5,000.
Who knows? Who knows? That's a story that's told in the book. And that's how the House of Love and Prayer, which to be honest, I'm not a legal expert. I can't tell you, but that's okay. What the story goes. Cool. Anyways, the point is, gewalt. When you go, when you push, even when it makes no sense, even if you're a simple guy, crazy things happen. So, in conclusion, I think we'll continue. I have a lot more miracle stories. Don't worry. And throughout the time next week, we'll talk more specifically about chesed and pushing yourself to do acts of love and kindness towards others and how that's going to, in a very hashkacha pratisful type of way, save our lives. But this week, I just want to conclude with the thought that, look, anything could happen. It all could be a coincidence. But I think the open-minded thing to do would be to do research. And research, for me, as silly as it sounds, means reading books like these, watching videos like these, interviewing people who claim to have miracle stories, and trying to see if this is actually a serious thing. And on a personal, Avodah Hashem level, what I think it means is speaking to God tonight in your bed, tomorrow during Shacharis, and asking God, God, I'd also like to see, you know, miracles. God, I really need this. And from a deep, sincere type of place, when you pray going above and beyond, and when we do mitzvahs in above and beyond type of way, then we'll see some Hanukkah miracles. And Bezat Hashem, we're going to end this year now. If anybody has personal questions, you can ask me off the ground.